everyone. Welcome to another episode of Murder, She Spoke, the Murder, She Wrote podcast. I'm very sorry for taking such a long break, but we're back again. I know I said that before, but I've been really busy, wasn't feeling it, so I didn't want to push through it without enthusiasm. So we're back at it today with Season 1, Episode 9. We're going to try and go from the beginning, hit all the episodes that I skipped, because I know I jumped ahead a bit. So we're going back to the beginning with Season 1, Episode 9, We're Off to Kill the Wizard. Alright, this episode starts off pretty strong on the creepy factor here. We have some random guy in a town car pledging that he would get Jessica to go wherever his boss wanted him to or whatever. And Jessica is in the front yard with her niece fixing a bike that the niece's husband couldn't fix, which I freaking just love. The man introduces his boss as the horrible Horatio, essentially, who owns a bunch of theme parks, like haunted horror houses, whatever. And it's such, like, if he would have come up to her if she was alone and tried to convince her to go to the park, she would have said no. But maybe he would have figured out a way to get her there. But the fact that those kids were right there and they wanted to come with just made it so easy. It was just kind of cheesy, in my opinion. The next scene is sort of like a stock. Someone locked up in a stock, and then like sort of like a medieval theme. And then you see the Broadway actor, James Coco, dressed kind of like as a monk kind of deal, riding in a cart. Okay, so James Coco, whatever his character's name is being led to be hanged on a hangman's platform. And he looks terrified, and honestly, all I can think of is it's supposed to be, like, pretend for the show. But all I can think of is it really is going to happen and someone will actually die. But I can't imagine that James Coco would be in this episode for 2 seconds. So, who knows? Okay, so I love how they pull off the stunt. No one dies. It looks like, you know, the writing in this show is so good because it tricked me, and they intended to do that. They're showing this hanging scene, and they are playing off of tropes in other murder shows or what people expect to see in murder shows. So they kind of set it up subtly that the viewer is going to think, oh, the murder is going to happen. It's going to be look like an accident, blah, blah, blah. But actually, it didn't happen at all. It was just a fake scene, and there was no misunderstanding. They were just joking around. No one actually got hurt from that particular scene that they put on for the press and everything. Which, that's one of the greatest things about this show, is that it sets up scenes that in the way that normal, like, murder shows would set it up, like, and any other show would set this up exactly the same way, but then the murder would have happened during the hanging, and it would have been accidental. And that's such a played out, like, trope that they made it look like that was going to happen, and then it didn't. So you're like, what? And that happens a lot within the show. Like, you think, you know, what's going on, but then they're like, no, you were wrong. And I honestly love that because it keeps you on your toes. And when you think that, you know, when you think that they're, oh, here's another, like, silly trope again, it never happens. Like, it always grounds you in reality a lot of the time. No, I'm not saying there aren't really outlandish things that happen in this show ever, but A lot of the time it sets up for those outlandish things and then is like kind of sets you up for you thinking that it's going to happen, and then they're like, what are you doing? So yeah, so anyway, the guy comes over who was in the town car earlier, the assistant to James Coco, who's the boss, I figured out, who's Horatio. So he comes over, and I love how Jessica isn't, like, she doesn't mince her words. Like, she brought two kids and her niece, to the show, and it was kind of weird to, like, make a joke about dying. And then they tried to play it off like something really did happen, because, like, then they were like, oh, get the ambulance, even though it was, like, a medieval thing themed, like, hanging, and then they're like, just kidding. So it was, like, so messed up, kind of. And Jessica, normally, I don't think she would have cared. But the fact, like, she was with two young kids, and the boy seemed to love it, but the girl was like, what's going on? So, like, she didn't understand, and Jessica, like, kept saying, you know, oh, they're just playing a game, whatever. But when he asked how you liked it, Jessica was like, it was a bit much. Ooh, ooh, this next scene is so good. Like, with cinematography wise, the next scene, the man says to the Jessica and her family, you know, like, okay, well, Jessica, I want you to meet my boss, and then I'll send the rest of your family on a tour. And they were like, okay, whatever. And the next freaking scene is a close-up on James Coco with the elevator opening, and then the next scene is a shot of Jessica, and the background behind her is just blood red, and I just love that. All right, so we set in on the trouble pretty early on in the episode. We're 7 minutes, 29 seconds in, but to be fair, most of that was intro. The freaking, the credits or the intro. Okay, so a burly man comes down the hallway, and they're talking about how essentially it looks like a prison complex where their work is done, because, like, they don't want any secrets to get out, so it's, like, all creepy and concrete. And then this guy, like, comes at James Coco and is like, hey, listen, I've been trying to get a hold of you. And he literally, like, the acting is so good, because, like, he's acting all like, Jessica, you know, I'm glad you could join us. I have some things to talk to you about. Acting super cavalier, super chill. And then when this guy comes at them, like, and to confront him, he kind of steps behind Jessica. And Jessica doesn't move. She doesn't move at all, because that's a great contrast for her character. Like, because he obviously doesn't have any weapon. He wasn't being, like, he wasn't attacking them. He was just coming up quickly to, you know, talk to James Coco. And Jessica did not shy away at all. She didn't move, but James jumped, kind of, like, slunk behind her. And in my, like, if I were in that situation, I would have stepped to the side to, like, I would have noticed James Coco was, like, slinking behind me, so I would have stepped to the side so he wasn't hiding behind me, and I would have, like, side, like, I would have made a triangle, sort of, with the two other guys, but she didn't move at all, and I kind of like that. It's really, like, on brand with her character, because she takes things head on, and she doesn't, like, I don't think it would have been in her character to jump back. The only scenario where I can think where she would really, like, maybe duck down or something is if there was someone with a weapon coming at her or something like that. But she is not afraid to take on angry men. So this angry man reveals that James Coco has been kind of, like, ghosting him, and that he was like, listen, we need to talk. You know, you're gonna, there are all these safety violations. And apparently, like, he's, I guess, the foreman or whatever, where he signs all the safety, like, papers. So any safety violations would be, like, ruining his name. And James Coco is, like, not wanting to talk about it. And Jessica's like, oh my gosh. Like, she immediately knows, like, she's dealing... James Coco is, like, a slimy piece of shit. Okay, so... I paused it too soon. Like, I paused the show, like, when he said, it's my name on the line, my name on those permits. So, I got the impression that James was kind of slinking behind Jessica, but after I continued playing, I realized he kind of wasn't. He went from being like, not right now, to screaming at him aggressively, and Jessica just, like, sort of, like, flinched and closed her eyes like, oh, man, this is... I'm dealing with a fucking asshole. Okay, I rewatched it, and I was totally wrong. He did not really slink behind Jessica. It was a weird timing thing where he calls out James Coco out, and he stops before Jessica stops. So he stops walking, but it does look like he's kind of slinking behind her, but really he stops walking before she stops walking. Which is very, very realistic, honestly. Like, she would have kept walking. Like, that's just... This is honestly why I love the show. Because that's just such realistic... Like, in real life, she wouldn't have stopped at the same time as him. She would have stepped, like, a few steps and then realized he stopped. And it just... That's why I love this show. So fucking good. And I don't know whether that's blocking or... Angela Lansbury, or, you know, and I don't know who is to credit for that, these minute details, but very, very good. So then I rewatched that section, so he comes up to him, and then James Coco's like, hey, can you, like, not right now? And then he started going off on him, and then he just screamed, and Jessica immediately knew what type of person he was. And it was almost like he forgot that Jessica was there, but he yelled because Jessica was there. It's, like, so weird, because he was acting all friendly and kind to Jessica, and, like, he's, like, the greatest, nicest guy, and everyone's happy. But then, like, he got mad at this foreman to coming and telling him this stuff in front of Jessica, but then he yelled at him because Jessica was there, but then... He was, like, kind of, not embarrassed, but, like, you could tell his face was, like, oh, yeah, I just yelled in front of Jessica. Like, it was such a weird thing. So, Jessica did not hide her expressions. Like, she looked at him like, okay, I regret this already. Like, she already didn't want to be there to begin with, but she was, you know, she has a good, like, like, she was gonna give him a chance. She's good spirit when it comes to stuff like that. The acting. Oh, okay. So good. So, then James Coco is like, after he yells, he looks at Jessica, realizes what he did, but he plays it so cool, then he's like, next time use discretion. Like, and he tries to tone down what he said. And then after the guy walks off, the expression that James Coco has, like, oh man, it's like his eyes, you can see he's looking back and forth very subtly, like, to see how he can salvage the moment where he yelled, and he, like, tried to, like, he, in that moment, you could see he had no idea what he was gonna do, but then, like, he kind of tried to, like, cover it up by saying, Swedes have tempers or whatever. And he looks at Jessica with a smile. And Jessica looks at him like, bitch, please. Like, you're a fucking monster. Like, she already fucking knows who you are. Holy fuck. The next fucking things he says are insane. So they're walking down the hall again, and she's just, like, over it. And then she's like, have you lured me here to offer me a job? And oh my gosh, he says, can you fucking believe what he says? He says, would you permit me to seduction, or would you permit me to do the seduction before you cry rape? What even? Honestly, I would have walked the fuck out. I would have been like, nope. But they're in, like, that such a creepy place. I might not have been safe, like, trying to run out. Because they're, like, not near anyone. Obviously, he doesn't mean literal rape. But, like, that's... Okay, first of all, so problematic. Because he's like... You won't even let me seduce you first before you cry rape. What? I can't fucking... I had to play it twice to make sure I heard it correctly. Like... Well, let's break this down from, like, just, like, the saying, it's almost like, I cornered you, I got you alone for sex, but I haven't even done anything yet, so you can't call it rape yet, even though we know that's where it's headed, but let me at least try first. Before you say it's rape, like, what even does that mean? Sorry, I got really loud. Oh my gosh, that's such a disgusting phrase. And, like, I have a feeling, like, it's kind of a common phrase. Because the way Jessica reacts to it, if it was, like, written as not an uncommon phrase, she probably would have been written to react, like, very adversely to it. But I'm kind of concerned that's a phrase that people used in the 80s. And honestly, or earlier, because that guy's intent is, like, he's written to be very creepy. So I feel like that's might have been something people said. And that was really setting the tone for his character. Because I don't think that would be something that they wrote specifically for his character. Because that would make him even creepier. I think they're just setting the tone with Artie... established creepy sayings, from my opinion, but I have never heard that, and that is disturbing as fuck. But honestly, like, Jessica's probably not afraid. I paused it right after, so I don't know what's gonna happen next. I could be, you know, like, I had to pause it right after he said that. Okay, so I watched the next couple seconds. Okay, it had to be a phrase that, that had been used in the past, because I guess, no, I don't understand why someone would take that phrase so lightly. Like, obviously, the timing, the era, like, people freely talked about rape and making fun of it in the 80s and then in the 90s, which is not okay. I cannot believe that he said that. I'm just so... Oh my gosh. Anyway, the only person who reacted properly in this is after he said that, Jessica's like, oh, okay. Like, she got the idea of what he meant, and she didn't take what he actually said seriously. But she was just like, oh, okay, you know, like, I'll let you give your pitch or whatever. Which, why didn't he just say, like, hey, I didn't even pitch to you yet. You can't reject my pitch yet. Like, oh, that fucking analogy is rough. Anyway, as soon as he said it and she's like, oh, okay, and they start walking, this guy pops out of his office that they were walking by. And he was just like, he looked at them like, what the fuck? And honestly... The appropriate reaction to that. But unfortunately, I don't think he's reacting to what he said, but rather what he was trying to do is bring Jessica in for some reason. Clearly, there are issues within his company. Okay, so they walk into the office before his office, where his secretary is, and his secretary kind of looks like a young Carrie Fisher mixed with a young... Lucille Ball's daughter. I forget her name. But that's who she kind of looks like. Or someone like that. I don't know. So yeah, she comes in. And still, James Coco is acting so good. So she comes in and sees that the secretary has one of Jessica's books on her desk. And she notices and comes over and picks up the book and starts talking to her. And James Coco's, like, anxiously waiting for her at the door. Like, he, you can tell he's, like, trying to suck her in there. Essentially, like, a spider trying to get an insect into his web. Because he needs, like, he knows if any second now she could just get the fuck out of there and he'd lose his chance. So he's like, you see he kind of like shakes a little bit, like, come on, let's go. Okay, so she's talking to the secretary and she's like, would you like me to sign your book? And she's like, oh, that would be an honor. Or Jessica was like, would you like me to sign your book? I would love to if that's all right. And then the secretary was like, oh my gosh, that would be an honor. And she said, I'm trying to write too. It's really hard work. And Jessica was like, yeah, it is. And then James Coco bringing out his fucking temper again. James Coco's character. Let me rephrase that. When I say James Coco, I mean his character. I don't remember. Oh, Horatio or whatever. He's like, excuse me, Jessica. He very, very impatient. And I fucking love her because she already sees through his shit. And he's like, can this not wait? We need to go. And she's like, actually, it can't. She just fucking essentially kicks him to the ground and pays attention to the secretary. Because honestly, that's what I would have done. And first of all, I wouldn't have even gone to begin with. But I find great pleasure in doing things. Like, I don't think she finds pleasure in what she's doing. But I would find great pleasure in sort of like shoving him to the side. I would do it vindictively where Jessica does it honestly. But yeah, I think her character is just so great. Okay, never mind. I paused it before she winked. I should stop pausing it until the scene's over, but I want to get everything that, I want to get every thought I have down before I forget it. She was doing it kind of vindictively. So, as soon as she says, no, this can't wait, and I pause the video. But after that, she just winks at the secretary, and the secretary kind of chuckles, because Jessica intentionally is fucking up the meeting with Horatio, and she understands the dynamic. Everyone probably hates him, and she just the secretary is, like, loving it. Okay, so we find out the guy that peeked out of his office, was in fact, I was right about that, he was, shocked that Jessica was in fact there, so he goes into the office of the architect, and is like, she's here, and he's like, so what? And he's like, you know, that means more, you know, falsifying documents, blah, blah, blah. So clearly it's a fraudulent operation, which we kind of gathered that from the beginning. So he's like, you know, all more falsified documents. Essentially, we allude to the fact that they want to make a haunted park sort of deal off, I'm assuming, from her stories. Because they're all murdery related. So, and then in this scene, it also establishes that Horatio makes false promises. He kind of traps people, probably blackmails people into their jobs because the old guy says, or the young guy who's the architect says, you know, if you don't like it, you can leave. You know, like, why don't you quit? And he's like, you know, I can't do that. And it wasn't, you know, I can't do that because, like, I need the money sort of thing. It was like, you know, I can't do that because I think something's sinister and maybe he's being blackmailed. But again, that could be us, you know, the story leading the audience to that assumption where that's not the case. So who knows? But I think there's something more devious involving the fact that he can't quit. And then he said, huh, the architect was like, you know, essentially saying he wouldn't quit because he's going to be made vice president. And then the older guy was like, yeah, I was promised that 2 years ago, too. So essentially, Horatio is stringing these people along and trying to, like, trap them into the job so he can do some illegal shit and make that money, because that's always what it's about. Okay, so after the architecture scene, the next scene, they're in James Coco, Horatio Baldwin's office. He is behind the most opulent desk. Let me rewind so I can look at it again. The desk is so beautiful. See, okay, so if you look at the desk, this is what I don't understand. Like, I understand the whole point of the desk to be, like, for show, but it honestly looks like the desk is facing the wrong way. Like, the drawers are facing the outside, so, like, is he facing the back of the desk? So, like, the pretty parts can be out front? How ugly is the back of the desk that... I just don't understand. Like, I get that the desk is... So he can sit behind the desk facing the door, which I get. But... Also, and I get that the backs of desks can be ugly sometimes, but that desk looks like it's beautiful on both sides, considering how it's constructed. So why are the doors facing Jessica? It's weird, unless it's one of those desks where it has minimal drawers on the one side, and then, like, on his side, there are, like, a bunch of drawers. Who knows? Could be the style, whatever, but it is gorgeous, and... he has some antique books with, antique bookends, a crystal ball. It's really weird because it has, like, that prison, like, military complex vibe, but then there are, like, these very opulent, like, accessories, but, like, they aren't really... melded into the space well. It's almost like they had the space and then he plopped a bunch of things he thought rich people had, but like really crazy rich people. Like there's a statue of what looks like a golden devil, and then on the then there's like a silver angel, and then I do love the painting behind him of the three angels in the water. I think it's water or something. Now that I think about, is it water or are those just people they're standing on? That would be fitting. But it looks kind of like water, but I don't think it is. But I do like it. But yeah, it just doesn't feel right. Okay, so creepy factor is leveling up. The next scene... not the next scene. I just described the desk. Oh, man. So, he wants to make a theme park, essentially, Jessica Fletcher, Horatio, whatever, presents, Jessica Fletcher's House of Murders and Horrors. And then she was like, no. And he was like, come on, blah, blah, blah. And then... It was just, like, he was just saying, you know, murder, or horror, gruesome things, that's what sells. And then when she said no, like, and he said it's for kids, and she was like, what the fuck? And he was like, oh, please, don't be so moral. And she was like, fuck off. She got up and to leave, and then he has a button, he has a Matt Lauer button. Sorry, that was so loud. He has a button... that you press, it's a lion that is etched into the desk, which is gorgeous, and you press the lion's tongue, and it latched the freaking door, which, actually, looking at the latch, it can probably be pried open. It's just, like, it looks like wooden, maybe. I love Jessica. Okay, so, like, she's not even concerned for her own safety. She looks at the latch, looks at him, and he said... Which, that bitch be lying, because he said, you know, I had this latch put in so unwanted visitors wouldn't come into my office, but I've never had to I used it to keep people out, but I've never used it to keep someone in. And you know what? He looks so like he's lying. Like, that's such a thing men say, like, if they, like, God, this is the first time. But she's not even, like, concerned. She just is, like... And then she's, like, this is really childish. Like, she straight up says that to him. She's, like, lighting the powder keg over and over again. She knows it. Like, she's ready. Calling his shit out, and I love it. Okay. So, he tries to keep Jessica and his, in his office. She's like, fuck off. So he lets her go and then makes a call and says, you know, I need you to do your end of research. She's being harder than we thought. Which I assume means blackmail, dig something up to trick her into fucking doing. Because apparently fucking everyone has secrets, so that's how you get people to do what they want. Which, I mean, I guess works. So, next scene is, there's a shot and the security guards come into the secretary's office. She's not there. They break down the door, which I have an issue with, because the latch, they know where the latch is on the door. Obviously it's on the side with the doorknob. They made it clear they know about the latch. But he's out there breaking... First of all, there is an axe and a fire extinguisher right next to the door, so super perfect. He takes the axe out and starts breaking down the panels on the other side, on the opposite side of the doorknob, which doesn't make sense. Which, in that scenario, he clearly is not experienced. So I'm gonna chalk that up to not using common sense in a scenario, because he's a security guard and he probably hasn't come across a lot of actual crime, like that. So, but anyway, he should have just, like, hacked at the doorknob or the latch or something, or hacked at the latch and then reached in and undid the, undo the latch. But he just fucking took out the whole door paneling, which came out very cleanly, you know, so before that, he calls over, I think it's the architect, because he's still working late, and they all come in, and then they see, obviously, Horatio is, I'm assuming, dead. No one checked his pulse or anything. There's a gun in his hand, and his temple's bleeding. Okay, so I watched a larger chunk, so, okay, so Horatio Baldwin is dead. Found him dead at the desk. They immediately know it was murder, but there is no way to get into the room. Jessica goes to meet what I thought was the architect, but I think he's just, like, Baldwin's right-hand man, or whatever is what they called him. So she goes into, like, one of the attractions at the park where they're having trouble with, like, this huge statue. Like, it's a huge talking head of Baldwin's face, and they're, like, there's wiring and stuff, and there she runs into the young man. I'm just gonna keep calling him the architect because that's what I've called him this whole time. His right-hand man, whatever. And the foreman or whatever, I forget what he does, what they said he does. But Jessica's like, oh, I hope everything worked out, all your problems. And the guy was like, I don't have any problems, blah, blah, blah. And she was just like, that's so weird, because, like, yesterday he was, like, you know, really worked up. And then the architect, I think, is it the same guy as the... I think it has to be it's the same guy, right? I have such a hard time recognizing faces. A lot of times... Yeah, I think he's the same guy. Yeah. Okay. So, he's just so congenial, and, you know, he was saying, like, I was on the scene. He was the one that the security guards called, and he told them to break down the door, And he was like, I was on the scene seconds after. You could still smell gunpowder. There was no way to get out of that room or into that room. It was latched, blah, blah, blah. And then she said, well, does anyone want him dead? And he started listing off, like, literally everyone. And he was kind of, like, joking about it. And it was, like, really funny. But after he left, like, there was nothing suspicious about him. But the fact that, in fact, made him suspicious to Jessica, I think. Because he was just being super chill and, like, cavalier. And then the ending scene, like, the ending shot of that scene is him leaving, them having a good time, him leaving. And then she kind of looking like, huh. And that kind of, like, makes me wonder. Oh, shit, the thuggery isn't done. Okay, so Jessica gets to the airport. I don't know why. I think she's flying. I don't know what she's doing, honestly. I know that she changed her flight to be later and then had a flight coming back or something. I don't know. I'm not sure where she is. I'm not sure where she's going, and I'm not sure if she's coming back. I don't know. But anyway, a guy meets her at her car when she's getting to the airport. He leads her to a different gate because of construction. She's like, no, no, no. I was told this gate. Let me check. And then, fucking Horatio's, the guy that got her to go to the park in the first place, he was there and he's like, no, you have plans with me. And she's like, what? And then he opens his jacket and there's a gun, like, tucked into his waistband. Jessica, instead of being scared, she's just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, she's just like, again, I love how she just, like, calls them, like, childish is such a good word for that. She's like, are you serious? And he's like, I have someone who's dying to meet you, blah, blah, blah. And she's just like, what the fuck? I love how she's just, instead of being scared, she's always, her expression is, like, being super inconvenienced. Like, it's almost like, I have to deal with this bullshit again. I just want to go about my day. Alright, so she's led onto this private jet, which Jessica is really fucking bold. She said that she would have gone it with him anyway just because of she's curious, which would have been could have been easily very dangerous. Going on a plane with a guy with a gun and meeting someone she doesn't know. But you find out she gets on the plane and it's Horatio Baldwin's wife. Okay, so I feel like it's spent this whole episode, it's 25 minutes in. I guess it's halfway. That's reasonable, I guess. It's been setting up, like, setting everything up. So, the guy that originally got Jessica to go to see Horatio was the one who pulled her in at gunpoint to the freaking plane. Apparently, is sleeping with Horatio's wife at his request. But anyway, well, now widow. She wants it to be proven that he was murdered or she wouldn't get his insurance policy. So Jessica was just like, I mean, I was gonna do that anyway. And then she offered her like $100,000 to do it and she's like, no, I'm good. So then they're all super chill on the plane ride. What the fuck? I still don't know where she was flying to or flying from or whatever. But anyway, she returns back to her niece's house. And Horatio's secretary's there. And she says, I need help because they're looking for her. And Jessica's like, oh, don't worry about it. And she's like, no, I killed him. And she's like, what? Okay, so the next thing they go... Next thing I want to talk about is when... The whoever's, like, dressed in all black, they put a recording of a cat on the balcony. And, like, what the fuck? So anyway, he goes to the balcony and picks up the recorder. And then a guy in all black chokes him and throws him over the balcony, but... him ragdolling from the balcony all the way down, it looks so fake. But honestly, I don't know if someone was thrown off that way in real life, I don't know how it would look, but it looks so fake. Watching the guy in all black pick up the tape recorder again and walk out kind of reminded me of the same demeanor as the guy they caught at the airport, the older guy, which is interesting. Okay, so we found out, I figured out why the guy, his right-hand man, the one... I need to know his name, because I keep having to reiterate, like, because there were two people that referred to themselves as the right-hand man, I think. The guy who was having sex with Baldwin's wife at his request, or whatever. He was the one thrown off the balcony, and it turns out he's the one, because the blackmail files, they can't find the files, but he's the one who would know what's in the files, because apparently he used to be a private investigator under a different name, and so he's the one that Horatio would use to dig up all the blackmail dirt, so he knew everything that was in the files, and therefore he had to die. Now, the question is, which person that they had blackmail on is the one who killed him? He apparently had blackmail on everyone because... I just realized, I mean, I'm trying not to recap the whole story here. Like, I assume you watched the story or watched the episode before listening to this, but I never really cleared up, like, the secretary said that she was the one who killed him, but it really wasn't, because she said she killed him, like, because she left. Well, meanwhile, he, like, kind of fired her. They had a fight and she left, and therefore, then he was killed after. But I didn't clear that up for those of you listening to me who haven't watched the episode, and I didn't tie that up. But yeah, I'm not recapping the whole story, so I recommend watching the episode and hearing me talk about it. So anyway, you know what? I am going to recap. Okay, let's go. Where were we? Okay, so... Once this... Let's go back for a second. When the secretary... They find the secretary, finally. She's at Jessica's niece's house. She says, you know, hey, you know... She was talking about how she was being kept there by blackmail. And then he said she'd never... If she quit... she would never work again, and she said that she didn't care, that she needed to get out, and they showed, like, a frantic scene, and James Coco was just laughing his ass off, and, like, evilly walking into his office, and then she said he latched the door. No one was in there when she left, and she left, like, pretty close to before he died. So then Jessica's like, okay, her and her niece's husband, the detective, are like, all right, so they decide to look through his office, and the detective's like, wait, we already looked through it everywhere to find where a person could hide, and Jessica was like, yeah, but we didn't look for, like, a cubby hole for documents to slip into, and he was like, oh, yeah, okay. So they go back to the office, and his, the detective's boss was there, and they were all looking, and then Jessica noticed something that he noticed that she asked him what the temperature, the architect, let's just keep calling him that, the architect came in and was like, so what's going on, blah, 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 like, way too casually into the incident than, like, you know, it seemed weird. Like, he's really interested but plays it off. Like, he's coming in, hey, what's up, guys? You know, just passing through, but, like, his boss died, like, why, you know, like, they're still working. I don't know. So, anyway, Jessica asked the temperature, because there's a temperature gauge on his desk, and then the architect was like, it is always 68 degrees, and then she was like, that's weird, because why would he have a temperature gauge on his desk? And then she touched it, and there was, like, soot on it, so she lit a match next to the temperature gauge until it reached 100 degrees, and then the freaking desktop popped open, and there, there was a special location, but all the blackmail files were gone, which she assumed that's where they were. They're gone. So, yeah, so suspicious. Which that scene was so cool. So that's when she was talking about how, okay, so the blackmail files aren't there, but it does tell us that there has to be someone, you know, like he didn't come up with this. James Coco didn't come up with the blackmail on his own, so he would have had someone to gather them, which means there's someone that knows what's in the files, and I think they jumped to the conclusion that that old guy knew, maybe, and that's when they picked him up at the airport or something, but apparently he was trying to flee with all the money and cash in a briefcase, but it turns out that he's saying that it's his money, and I don't know, it was really weird. So apparently they had him on, they were blackmailing him for something, but then Jessica was like, the stuff they were blackmailing him for wasn't a big deal, so they were like, why did you run? And he was like, well, they, you know, they told, someone called me and said, like, you know, they're after me, or the police are after me, so, or something, and so he fled, but then, like, the police got a call that he was at the, that he was gonna flee or something, and then, I don't know, it was kind of confusing, and then the whole, him, the other guy, the guy who is his right-hand man, who I mentioned before, used to be a private detective, he's the one who actually would have known what was in those blackmail files. He was thrown over the roof. So that's where we are now. Okay, so Jessica out there setting people up. Jessica goes to the office to check things out. And she realizes that the phone line, there's something wrong with the phone. So I don't totally understand it yet. And I know they'll explain it later. But the one line was clipped under the phone, which the fact that she figured that out was really sketch. But also, maybe the bottom was, like, a little loose, so she undid it. Like, you know when, like, you're in scenarios like that, you'll look at anything at that point, because she was fucking desperate for the clues. So then she has the architect call her, and she said that, you know, it was such a shame that one guy was thrown off the balcony or whatever, that he died, and then she said he had files, but they were on microfiche now. And she's told him where she thinks they were. And this is very obvious that she's setting him up. She's setting him up because she wants to see if he's the one who killed him over the balcony. Because he's the one desperate to get that blackmail information out of there. which is what I'm assuming, but I could be wrong. So she sets him up by telling him that, you know, she thinks that they're in the Tunnel of Horrors or whatever, and she thinks that they're, I think she alludes to the fact that they're behind the fake head of Horatio that, like, talks and stuff. So, yeah, major setup. And also, like, if he was the killer and she called him to tell him these things, I think it's funny because, like, her doing this is to kind of set up a killer's ego, if I'm correct, because if he's the killer, that means he was going into the office checking things out, kind of being, like, pretty chipper about it, just, you know, keeps establishing the fact that there was no way for anyone to get in or out, and that he had to have shot himself, wouldn't even consider the idea that anyone else did it, but in a very, like, cheerful way, and then now, like, so obviously he thinks that he's out of the clear, you know, he's in the clear, so, Jessica telling him these things, he's probably assuming that she doesn't think it's him, so she's sharing stuff with him, and because he was the one at that, like, Horatio had, like, she was sharing it with him, so, like, him suspecting that she suspects is not realistic because of the ego involved, probably, if I'm correct. But I think that's funny. Like, if I was in his place and heard her say something like that, I think I would be suspicious of her being suspicious. So I wouldn't go and try to get the microfiche or whatever. I think I've just watched too many murder episodes to know what a trap is. But again, I'm just, it's a hypothetical because I could be wrong. Okay, so I press play and it, like, shows him sneaking down in the Hall of Horrors or whatever to that, like, Horatio face. And I think it's funny to think about, like, behind, like, during when they weren't filming. Like, it's literally just James Coco's head, like, really big, and it, like, is animated or animatronic. So, like, can you imagine, like, being an actor and then, like, when you're out of character, like, being like, hey, look, it's my huge head. I feel like they would have had fun with that. But who knows. Alright, so I was right. It was a trap. He goes to the head of James Coco, pulls out the microfiche, and Jessica catches him in the act. And then he was like, wait, how'd you get here? You're across town. And she was like, I forwarded my calls. Burn. Just like you forwarded yours when you killed Horatio. And he's like, you're crazy. And she was like, Nah, bitch. And she explains why. Holy fuck, Jessica fucking lost. Fucking fucking car. Okay, so she was like, okay, this guy is a cold-blood killer. Like, no joke, fucking cold-blood killer. She's standing there at the end of the hallway, and I thought it looked kind of weird. She was just standing there, not walking towards him. And he was like, well, you're clever. Yeah, you're right. He pulls out a gun, and she's like, ugh, again with the guns. And he was like, whatever. And then he fucking shot her. But it turns out it was an illusion and a mirror or something. And he shot right through the mirror or the something in there. And it shattered, and he realized she wasn't even there. So, like, he was killing her to hide the fact that he killed the other people. And he's like, what's another murder? And, I mean, she wasn't even there. And he just stands there. Like, I find that unrealistic. Like, he shoots her, she's not there. And I immediately would have turned around. Like, that's insane. And then you find out that someone else is there. We have the detectives there, the foreman, and two other police officers. And honestly, like, he's standing there and they're like, okay, put the gun on the ground and kick it over. honestly, like, he didn't want to get shot, I assume. But, I mean, he was on a killing spree already. I'm surprised he didn't open fire. Okay, so Jessica comes out of the shadows and thanks the foreman or groundskeeper or technician for helping with the illusion. And then the architect's like, "You were lucky about the microfiche." And she was like, "There wasn't any." She's just like, "These are photos from my trip to wherever. Like, this isn't real." And he's like, "Fuck." Okay, everything makes sense. I just watched, like, the bit where they explained how everything happened. And it's so dumb. Why would he even commit? Like, okay, they were fighting and he accidentally knocked him into the pillar and killed him. That's such an accidental thing. They probably had... First of all, I find it really weird that he doesn't have any cameras in his office. But maybe he doesn't because he's doing shady stuff. But also, I find it weird that he doesn't have cameras in his office or outside his office or whatever. But anyway, the fact that he was fighting with him and accidentally killed him, what he should have done is just run to the phone, called 911, and told them what happened. He might have been, like, in a little hot water for a minute, but it was accidental when he attacked him. And everyone knew how awful he was, so no one would have, like, really given it a second thought or whatever. I mean, it would have been so easy, but what was his first thought? He panicked and decided, like, I don't understand why his brain instead of, you know, just saying, "Hey, we had a fight and he fell back and hit his head," like, that would have been so much easier than fucking tampering with all the phones. Fucking hiding, which could have easily not worked out for him. And then, like, planting the gun, and then his own gun, which doesn't make any sense, because it's his own gun. Like, it would have been traced to him pretty fast if that was one of the storylines. So it was like, he planted his own gun on the body as if he shot himself, which doesn't make any sense. But I guess no one knew it was his gun, which makes sense, too. But, like, it's just a lot for, I guess, when someone, like, is put in that situation, I can understand it's just so, like, oh my gosh, I just killed a person. But he immediately checked the pulse. Like, I just find that bad writing, maybe, because, or something, because I would have filmed the scene a little differently. I would have had them fighting and then have him fall back, hit his head, and then have him, like, a little bit more time pass or something where he's, like, ready to fight him again but realizing he doesn't stand up, and then he tries to get him up and he's not moving, and he shakes him a little bit, not moving, and then he maybe checks his breathing, then his pulse, but he pushed him, he hit his head, and he immediately checked his pulse, which I find not really how things would work. You don't immediately think, oh, someone hit their head, they're dead. So, like, and especially because it happened so casually. So, like, I think if that had played out a little bit more in the scene, it would have seemed way more realistic. Unless, like, because I don't think he intended to kill him, obviously, or he would have, one, had a plan, or two, his plan would have been way simpler. So, he was accidentally killed in the heat of the moment, so, you know, the scene shouldn't have shown him just looking at his pulse right away. It should have, you know, gone through the motions of what realistically someone would have done in that situation. And I think calling someone about it, especially since no one else was in the office, could have just been like, he fell. Or they were fighting and he fell. Or he slipped and we were talking and he slipped and fell and hit his head. Like, honestly, it could have been so easy. Okay, so at the end, Jessica signs the check over to... She ends up taking the money from Horatio's widow, which is super not in character for her, but also kind of is. Like, she's just surprising. She does whatever. I mean, she was going to solve the crime anyway. Might as well take the fucking money, right? She signs it over to the secretary, and it's $100,000. I find that so rude to her nephew. He's right there, and she gives away $100,000 to the secretary she doesn't even know. And they both thought it was, like, a small check. And then they look at it, and it was $100,000, and I'm just like, I mean, she just helped him solve a murder, and he lets her have, you know, do whatever the fuck she wants. I guess she has tons of money. Maybe she gave them money before. You know, they seem to be okay. He has a job, but also, like, couldn't she have given half the money to his family? It's just such a weird slight, but it's also, like, not thinking too much into it. It's really cool that she gave the secretary so much money. She's just like, oh, whatever. And then when she looks at the check, Jessica waits for her to see the check. And it's so fucking hilarious. All right, that is another episode in the books. If you want to comment or anything, you can comment or message me on Twitter. It's M. Wellman, and my Twitter handle is CELLUSEWEN, Telusewen. Also, I do have an Instagram, too. It's BancroftJRB. But yeah, let me know if you like the episodes. Let me know if I missed anything or if I got something wrong, if I explained something wrong. Because, I mean, I could have heard something wrong. I was getting really into the episode, more into the action than, like, what they were actually saying. But yeah, thanks for listening, and I should be back pretty soon with another episode.